Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Five one is our text number. Anne Marie, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe. Hi.
Savita, you were.
Yeah, I am.
Prompted by this awful story to recall your own.
I was
episode.
Yes. When I turned on the radio yesterday and heard the news, it brought back a lot of memories to me. I had a miscarriage in 2004, and from what I know of her circumstances, and obviously none of us, I suppose, really know, only what we read in the media, but it rang a lot of bells with what happened to me. Thankfully, I'm here to tell the story.
So what happened? Because you were quite clear in contacting us, Anne-Marie, that you say, I owe my life to that consultant.
Yes, I believe I do, yeah. Well, it was, as I say, in 2004, mm-hmm. and I discovered I was pregnant, much to my absolute delight, and that of my partner, and we were, you know, all excited and that. But however, it was obvious pretty much from the beginning of the pregnancy that I was potentially in trouble because I had some bleeding. Now, nothing terribly significant, but enough for me to know that, you know, my baby could be in trouble.
Okay.
I needn't tell you, it never entered into my head that I could be in trouble because I had never heard of a woman's life being in danger through losing a baby. So all my worries and concerns were around my baby.
Okay.
So in those first early weeks, I had several trips into the maternity hospital. I live in Dublin. I don't know if you want me to say which hospital.
No, not at this stage. No.
Okay. Well, it was one of the major maternity hospitals in Dublin. And normally in a pregnancy, you don't see a consultant until in about 12 weeks. But because I was in trouble from early on, I had phoned up the early pregnancy unit and they saw me there and I was scanned. And I can't remember, 6 or 7 weeks, you could see the little heartbeat was beating away, and that was, of course, lovely to see. But on the scan, you could also see what they described to me as an area of bleeding. So that kind of didn't mean anything to me, except that it didn't sound too good. But however, I did go back, and again, I can't remember exactly, but I certainly had a couple of scans. Unfortunately, the bleeding continued. Again, not desperately bad, but enough to be a cause to worry. And then, unfortunately, pretty much suddenly, at just a day or two short of the 12 weeks, I got very severe bleeding. So we went into the maternity hospital, to the emergency department, and I was seen by the doctor that was on call or on duty that night. So she carried out a scan, and again, the little baby's heart was beating away, and you could see it moving too, because at that stage you can see some movement. So the doctor, I was bleeding quite heavily, but anyway, she said to me just to go home. I live about a half an hour drive from the hospital. She said to me to go home and go to bed, and if the bleeding became any worse, to come back in again. So we turned around and came home, and pretty much as soon as I got home, I knew I was in serious trouble. I was really bleeding very, very heavily. So we just turned around and went back into the hospital. So the same doctor was there, and she scanned me again. And unbelievably to me, the little heartbeat was still there and the baby moving around. So at that stage, she arranged to have me admitted to one of the wards. So I was up on a ward somewhere in the hospital, and they put me up on a drip. And at this stage, I was in quite a lot of pain, and I was also very nauseous and you know, my stomach very sick and that. So at one stage, I remember saying to the nurse that I had this feeling like of kind of floating away or drifting away, sort of, you know, that kind of drowsy, or I don't know how to describe it, this kind of feeling. So with that, then there was a great flurry of activity, and I remember they came in and they put me up on another drip, and I remember seeing one of them kind of, you know, the IV bag with the fluid in it. They squeezed that and they put extra fluid into me. So, I mean, thinking back now, I obviously didn't really realise at the time. I suppose I was bleeding so much, I was, I don't know, maybe drifting into unconsciousness. I don't know. But anyhow, so as morning time came, it was about midnight, I think, when they admitted me to the ward. So at about 7 o'clock in the morning, the consultant arrived in, and he didn't even examine me because he'd obviously been speaking to the doctors and the nurses that were looking after me during the night. And he just said to me, he said, you know, Anne-Marie, I'm really sorry, but we're going to have to bring you down to theatre and I'd have to do a D&C.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to him, what do you mean, you know, do a D&C? Sure, my baby is still alive. I said, you know, you can't do that.
Because the fetal heartbeat was still there.
Oh, the fetal, they were scanning me a couple of times during the night, and the heart was still beating away. And I said to him, I said, you can't do that, you know, the baby's still alive. And let me tell you, Joe, this was a very much wanted little baby.
Yeah.
But anyway, so he said to me, he said, Anne-Marie, he said, I'm really sorry, but he said, at this stage, he said, if we don't get you to the theatre, it's not the life of the baby is my concern now at this time. And he said, I need to stop the bleeding, he said, stop you bleeding. And he said, unfortunately, the only way I can do that is to do a D&C. So although I was absolutely distraught, I realised, obviously, my poor little baby was not viable. It was only a tiny little 12-week baby. So it wasn't a case of, well, you know, either or. I mean, if I died, the baby, you know, was gone. So so anyway, there was no choice. So they had to take me down to theatre and do the D&C.
And in one sense, from the story we've heard, and we heard stories yesterday as well, Carolyn, in particular, the one aspect I'm recalling, Carolyn was, she was 17 weeks, just like Savita, and she was losing the baby, but because there was a fetal heartbeat, the hospital said they wouldn't intervene. Mm-hmm. And even though, as she described it, it was horrific description, she was wailing with the pain, such was the extent of the pain, but the hospital wouldn't give her pain medication because they still had a fetal heartbeat. Now, as we know, when the consultant eventually arrived, that changed dramatically.
Yeah.
But when you said to, and you're now arguing the opposite position, so to speak, you're saying to the consultant in this Dublin hospital, listen, there is still a fetal heartbeat, why would you terminate or evacuate or facilitate a miscarriage? And did you argue with any further, or he was just so adamant and clear that you were in serious danger?
He was very clear and I remember this was kind of 7 o'clock in the morning, and I had gone through a very bad, say, 12 hours, and I kind of knew he wouldn't say that lightly, and I was pretty unwell. I suppose literally I put my faith in him, and I knew that no doctor would say that unless there was very good reason to say it.
And it worked, I presume.
Oh, it worked absolutely. As soon as I woke up in the theatre. Now, because I had lost so much blood I was extremely physically unwell, in the sense of my.
So the bleeding stopped immediately, and you were out of danger.
I was out of danger,
and the consultant was very decisive.
Oh, very.
And adamant.
And it's funny. I have never. I went back to him once for a checkup at 6 weeks. I have never seen him nor spoken to him since then. And I've often thought, I wish I could just say thank you to him, because if I had had the misfortune maybe to have another doctor who maybe had any qualms or hesitated or that, maybe I wouldn't be here telling you my story, you know.
Stay with us for a sec, Anne-Marie, if you can. 51551 is our text number, joe@rt.ie. Sheila is on the line. Sheila, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Now, just another issue that's arisen is E. coli and septicemia that has been mentioned. Now, you say you would want to try and raise awareness, especially among women, of the dangers of septicemia, and to be aware that if you're having difficulties, this is what might be happening to you, and to get it dealt with immediately. What happened in your case, Sheila?
Well, in my case, Joe, after my third baby, I had a cesarean section. And 8 days after the section, I went into septic shock, which turned out to be E. coli septicemia. And luckily, my sister-in-law was in the house at the time, and she rang for an ambulance and got me straight to hospital. And they knew what they were dealing with and dealt with it brilliantly.
Now, Sheila, when you say septic shock, just for people to understand what it means, do you bleed? Do you collapse? Do you fall into a weakness? Are you in extreme pain?
It starts off, you just feel very fluey, painful joints and that. Then I got extremely cold. I've never experienced cold like it. And then shaking and twitching, can't breathe properly, your heart is racing, start turning blue because you're not getting enough oxygen in. You're confused, unsteady on your feet. Then I collapsed my legs, lost the feeling in my legs.
Pretty catastrophic symptoms, yeah.
Yeah, and like I pleaded with the doctors in the hospital not to let me die. That's how frightened I was and how I felt at the time, that this was it. I wasn't going to come home and see my baby and my other girl. But just to raise awareness that it can kill so quickly, and so many people die unnecessarily because it could be treated if symptoms are recognised and dealt with.
And were you told how you contracted septicemia and E. coli? Is there any reason given, or?
They didn't say for definite, but they thought it was through the section. I had an infection in my womb, and from the catheter that I could have picked it up from, the cats are not being cleaned properly and emptied on time, okay, things like happened. That. They didn't say for definite.
Yeah, it can happen in a hospital setting, and it's nothing to do with negligence. It just happens. But you're saying that the difference in your case was your sister happened to be with you. And I presume when you get these symptoms, the last thing you want to do is to try and get up and get to hospital.
No, I just want to go to sleep. I just want to get warm and go to sleep. But luckily she wasn't having that. She told me I could fight with her another day and sent me off. And the hospital said if I hadn't got there even an hour later, I could have been gone. Okay. Gone into a coma and my body would have shut down. So it's just to let people know the symptoms if they're feeling confused, high temperature, low temperature, heart rate, and just to get to hospital.
Jennifer, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Your story.
Yeah, I was really, it's just, you know, everything that on the radio for the last few days about that poor lady in Galway. And
Savita.
My situation is slightly different, but, you know, it's obviously to do with abortion law in Ireland, and it's something like that I think that does need to be reviewed because of what happened to me at the time. But it's nearly 10 years ago now, and it's still obviously very raw, you know. But when I was 16 weeks pregnant, you know, just after really announcing it to everyone that, you know, I was having a baby and so delighted and, you know, going for all your different scans and blood tests and everything. And one weekend and a weekend away, I started bleeding. Yeah. And I went into the local hospital because obviously I was a bit worried. I had been sick. I'd been a week in hospital getting an IV drip into me previously before that because I have Crohn's disease, which is, you know, inflammation of your bowel and some medication I had to come off. And, you know, so I was being looked after just in case, you know, something would happen to me medically in relation to that condition. So I was worried, so I thought I'd go to a hospital, the local hospital, and they did a scan and they said, look, there's nothing, you know, doesn't seem anything wrong, and but may definitely go to your gynae when you go back home. So I went back to my gynecologist and I was feeling really sick and I just knew there was something wrong. I suppose, I don't know what it was, an instinct. And she did a scan in her room and she said, no, it doesn't seem anything wrong, but, you know, you definitely need to go to the hospital just in case. So I took my mum along because my boyfriend wasn't available at the time, and we went in and the consultant and all the nurses inside with me just started crying hysterically, all of them. I didn't understand. I don't think I really understood until I saw my mom crying, you know. But basically, they just said it to me that there was no hope for the baby and that I would probably miscarry. That was, you know, I'd stop bleeding, but they just said that, you know, I should have miscarried by now, and they couldn't understand and what was going on. But they explained to me that there was no amniotic fluid around the baby and that the baby had one kidney. There was fluid on his brain, and listed, and like he just seemed to keep listing stuff that was wrong with him.
Oh, there's still a heartbeat.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they just said to, you know, to go away, and somebody in contact with me, and we go for scans. And to be honest with you, I just left the hospital crying hysterically and in a haze. I didn't understand. You know, you go from being pregnant to going into something, you know, like that, and basically, you know, started meeting doctors afterwards because I was starting to get very sick within myself, my Crohn's disease, and also the baby, what was going on with the baby was affecting me physically. So I went to a consultant at the time, another consultant. I went to a gastroenterologist. I went to my own GP, and they were telling me it was so urgent that I needed to make a decision. They were opening, there was one consultant opened his rooms to me. He couldn't fit me in for 6 months, so he opened his rooms at 6-7 o'clock in the evening for me on his own time.
Mm-hmm.
And he did a 3-hour scan for me to see was there any hope for the baby. And he came out and he said that there was no hope for the baby, and basically your health is at risk and you need to make a decision urgently.
What were the options? If he says you need to make a decision, what options were they offering?
He didn't say it. He couldn't say it. And my mom was there. And, you know, obviously me and my boyfriend were just in a daze. So my mom kind of took control.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I know what I would do with my daughter. And he said, you need to read between the lines and you need to do it urgently.
And they couldn't do anything?
No, nothing.
And you were told you need to you went to four different consultants.
Yeah.
They said, all of them kind of said, you have to do something. None of them...
Nobody told me what to do. They just kept telling me, read between the lines.
But it was hardly nudge, nudge, wink, wink. No,
yeah. And opening, like urgently opening, like I went to see my GP at 11 o'clock at night. Nobody told me anything. I got no advice. And, you know, my mum then mentioned an abortion. You need to go, maybe go to England. And we were afraid to say it to anybody, you know, because, you know, about that X case, you know, getting stopped. And so you're nearly afraid to say anything to anybody in case somebody then might, you know, do something, you know, to stop you. Or I felt I had no choice, you know, physically. This baby was very much wanted. And eventually my mom took the decision away. She just made the decision for me.
And then what was the... You contacted a clinic in England?
And we went over, myself and my boyfriend, and we went over. I was 16 hours in labour over there.
My God.
It was the most horrendous experience to this day. Like, I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy what went on over there. They were very nice to me. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, going over somewhere, like, on a hush-hush, having a baby that you want, and a baby that's very much loved, and, you know... You're going into the clinic as well. That, you know, it's not really. I had hired my boyfriend because there's girls in there that may have been raped. They were saying to me, and that they don't want a man around the place. And you just have to, you know, have your baby and keep it quiet and don't say, you know, that we hide him and he used to come in a back entrance. And
Jennifer, did the clinic in the UK give you any opinion?
No.
As to options?
No.
You just said,
I need to have an abortion. It was under the
24-week
limit for them. And
who, it was one doctor or two doctors you speak to? It was one, is it?
One doctor.
One doctor,
you speak one before and one after.
Okay, and how long was the initial interview?
Oh, I can't remember, 10 minutes.
10 minutes, okay. And that's the situation.
And you pay, that's it.
Okay, abortion is legalised in the UK.
Yeah, it's very quick, like when you go in and meet somebody.
Straightforward, yeah.
They tell you the amount you pay and then they take you in. Like, it's not... You know,
so 16 hours.
16 hours in labour. I had a baby boy and I called him Alex. And I came home to England, Ireland. I cried getting on the plane. I didn't want to leave him. I remember inquiring at the time, could I bring him home? Like, I was just so naive when I think back. You know, and someone was saying to me, well, you can't get a birth certificate. So therefore, you can't get a death certificate. If you don't have a death certificate, you can't bring him home. Do you know? Like, that's what I was thinking. All I wanted was to bring him home. With me, I got on a Ryanair flight. I cried. I literally like collapsed getting on the plane. I didn't want to leave him, you know. And I remember asking them, what happens to him when you take him away? And they were like, oh, you know, he goes into the incinerator.
Okay.
And you know, and I think, could I take the ashes? And they were like, well, it's a big incinerator. There's no, you know, because to them it's an abortion clinic. It's not that somebody's having a baby. You know, they couldn't even believe I was asking these questions when I was over there.
So you got back home.
And I remember that I came home and, you know, you're hiding from people because you don't want to tell them. You just don't, you know, because you feel so guilty of what you did. And you have people like that. And I remember coming home then and I got sick. I got terrible cramps in my stomach. And I went to the local hospital. And I was telling them I had a baby, but I didn't want to tell them again because I was afraid. I don't know what it was. I was afraid I'd get arrested or, you know, I didn't want people judging me and just telling them I had a baby. And it turned out there was a problem. The placenta hadn't taken the placenta away properly and it had got infected.
Okay.
So they put me in an ambulance to the local maternity hospital and I was in with all these ladies with babies about 3 weeks after giving birth. And my sister went crazy inside, telling them, you need to get her out of here. I was so upset. You need to keep her away from babies.
Yeah.
And nobody would listen to her. And my consultant came out at 2 o'clock in the morning and had me out of there in 5 minutes, into a private ward, away from everybody.
Yeah.
And I was just saying it to your researcher there, 6 years it took me to be at peace with my decision.
There's one other person who just like to tell their story as well, and I want to finish with your story as well after this break. 51551. Stay with us, Jennifer.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.